Last week we introduced the sugya of Tam Ki Ikar. So just a quick recap. Although there is a basic halacha that permeates Sefer Tarov, it's called Bitul Barov, Achverav Mahatos, that's a dim in the Torah. That's the source of the famous halacha. We have three pieces of meat, two a kosher, one a shrei. If you're permitted to eat them, perhaps even to eat all three of them, perhaps even to eat all three at the same time. But if you have tam, if you have a taroves where there's a mixture of liquids and liquids, and you have a chaza soup mixed in with the potato soup, and you can still discern the taste of the treifus, then you have a huge problem. That's what the Mishnah says. Then you're not permitted to eat that food. Is that a prohibition in the Torah? Is that only a prohibition with the Rabbanan that we spoke a little bit about last week? The different nuances. There are many, many different applications, different permutations of those shittas. I remember when we learned some of the sugyas in Chulin, and Marsha Kolo, this goes back close to 40 years ago. So I remember, I guess in those old days, we used to make like charts. I remember we really made a chart for us on a piece of paper, you know, probably like Xerox, probably like Rexographed in the Marsha office or something. And it had a chart handwritten, you know, typing. It was way before that kind of world started. And all I remember is that there were eight different boxes as to eight different sheets of Rishonim, what the parameters of Tam Ki Ikar are. I have no idea what all eight were. I can remember about five or six of them, but I remember that number eight, that there were eight different sheets of Rishonim that he dug up about Tam Ki Ikar. So last week we mentioned some of the more famous ones, some of the more popular ones, but basically boils down to a fundamental machlokes, is Tam Ki Ikar a principle of Min HaTorah? And if it's a principle of Min HaTorah, just how far does it go? So much of the discussion about Tam Ki Ikar, before we get into how it plays out, Lamais Masa Shulchan Aruch today, much of the discussion in the Rishonim about Tam Ki Ikar revolves around one very, very cryptic Gemara that appears at the very end of Maseches Avodah Zarah. Gemara quotes the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Taimo Velo Mamosho Ein Lokin Alov. If you have Tam of something, just the taste, and not the Mamish, not the real Makor, not the real essence of something, Ein Lokin Alov. Adkan. But what does that mean? So one group of Rishonim led by Rashi say, well, Ein Lokin usually means it's not a Nisid Derayis, it's only a Nisid Derabanan. What do you think Tam of Mamosho means? Tam Ki Ikar. It means I can't see it. I mean, obviously it's there. If there's nothing there, it's not going to give taste. But I can't see it. We're also in the eye, and I can't see it anymore. So that's called Ein Mamosho, but it's still Tamo. So according to Rashi, that's what the Gemara says. Tam of Mamosho equals only a prohibition with the Derabanan. And other Rishonim say, not so fast. Some of Tosis quotes from the Rimi Alintz, one of the Balei Tosis, that says that Tavlo Mamosho, Ein Lokin Alov, Ein Lokin doesn't mean that it's only Derabbanan. Ein Lokin means it's an Issa Deraisa. But the type of Issa Deraisa that it is doesn't warrant Malchus. Not everything that's prohibited in the Torah automatically carries with the Malchus. Maybe it's an Issa Rasei, maybe it's derived from a Drush of Kabachem, and Memeteh. The Rimi Alintz, they give you different nuances as to why there's no Malchus. But the absence of the Malchus doesn't necessarily translate to mean, like Rashi says, only in the Siddur Rabbanan. Then there are other Rishonim, like the Rambam, who say that the Gemara is talking about, it's a very, very small amount of Tam. If you have, we mentioned last week, Kezayis, Mechdechilis, Pras, you have so much Tam in there that if you would eat the entire food, you would consume a Kezayis within the amount of time to eat a Mechdechilis, Pras, that's their Isa. If you have a little small amount of Tam, that's their Rabbanan. If Kahenu, every Rishon has what to say about that Gemara. And Rabbeinu Tam, who was of the opinion that Tam Ki Ikar is a dim in HaTorah, Rabbeinu Tam says, that Gemara is not even talking about Tam Ki Ikar. He says, Tam, no, it's talking about Min B'mino, there's no Tam, why the Gemara misled him? Long story, not for now. Bottom line is, the one Gemara that seems to have been the absolute Raya Brua Shalat Truva has a lot of Truvas to it. It's not so simple at all. So how does this play out? Tachlis, the Ma'is and Shulchan Aruch. How does it play out for us? So the real question we have to ask ourselves is, who cares how it plays out? What do you mean? Deraisa Rabban? What's the difference? We observe Hilchos Shabbos, we observe Hilchos Bishlachim, we eat matzah Pesach, and we light Chanukah candles. So for us, practically speaking, we observe Deraisa Rabbanans. At the end of the day, if you have a shot in your kitchen and we paskin, it's treif because the Mishnah says Tam Ki Ikar, and you have to throw out the food and you have to throw out the pot. Yeah? So what's the difference? Whether that's an absolute dimin haTorah or that's a chumah mid derabbanan? So whenever we hear that Shaila, so we always, our initial reaction is, oh, sfeikus. That's always the litmus test. That's always the way to measure whether something is deraisa, derabanan. If we're dealing with an issa deraisa, so we have to be much more machmir in cases of doubt, so sfeikus deraisa is lechumra. If it would only be derabanan, then we could be a little bit more maker. We've seen this in Hilchos Kashrus, in other areas of halacha. You know, like say, for example, I have a piece of meat, I have no idea whether it's chas or not. There's no robe, there's a 50-50 chance whether it's chas or not. You're not allowed to eat it. That's sfeikus deraisa lechumra. If you have a piece of meat that's kosher, but maybe it was cooked by a goy, I have no way of knowing whether it was cooked by a non-Jew or not. So Safek Bishalachim, Bishach says it's mutter, because Bishalachim is innocent to Rabbanim, it's making to Rabbanim Lekula. So we live our lives based on these two principles. These are Mishnayos, Gemaras, many, many sugars in Shas, which spell out these principles. So L'chora, this would be an important question to know. When I have these kinds of Sveikas and Uchus Kashros, and I'm not sure, do I have Tam, do I not have Tam? So is it Deraisa, Derabana? That would be an important question. But we have to backpedal for ourselves. You don't know whether you have Tam. What do those words mean, that you don't know whether you have Tam? How does that turn? Either you test it and you find out that you do have Tam, you don't have Tam. Now, you're not going to taste it yourself, because if it turns out that there is Tam, then you just violated the Nisr. So obviously you're going to have to ask a non-Jew to taste it. We spoke a little bit about this in the past. How do we trust the non-Jews? Normally we don't have non-Jews being our mashkichim in our store, so how in the world are they giving us a statement about kasher? So we'll talk a little bit more about this later on. But clearly that's the din. We're going to have to do some kind of a taste test. So if we're going to do a taste test and we're going to come up with results, either the goy is going to taste it or he's not going to taste it. So what does that mean? We have sveikus. So we have to backpedal a third time. A lot of going backwards today. So let's go back to the Gemara tells us in the seventh parak of Maseches Chulin, how these kinds of shadows really truly play out for us. Tachlas l'maisa. I have a woman realizes gaval, to hear that shriek from the kitchen, that somebody spilled some chazer. Not too common today, but somebody spilled some chazer into our pot of potatoes. In the olden days, there was a lot more of treifas hanging around the houses. First of all, people shechted things in their own houses, so yeah, you had all of a sudden somebody shechted, the chicken was nevela, they forgot to throw it out. They had chelev floating around in the houses. Chelev was removed, sent privately. You had gidanoshas floating around in the kitchen. I mean, there are a lot of treifa things that were floating around. Unlike, but we have institutionalized kashrus to the point where the time it makes it to your, package with the RCBC tape on it, we hope that all the gidanoshas, chelev, and nevelas have been already sorted out. At least that way, that's what we try to do. We hopefully succeed. We definitely succeed when we do that. So back to our, I don't give any bad PR. So back to that story. So here I have a pot of potato soup and a little bit of chazer just fell in. And now we're trying to figure out, gevald, is there tam, is there no tam? So the Gemara says there are two ways of ascertaining whether there is or is not tam. One is to have a non-Jew. If the non-Jew comes and tells you that he tastes it, you have a problem. He tells you he doesn't taste it, then it's okay. But that's not always a foolproof. First of all, we don't even always have goyim around. You could live in a place where it's kind of hard to find a non-Jew. We've sometimes had that problem with Shabbos. Not always so easy. So the Gemara says that sometimes you have a situation that Pasha no goyim around, or we don't want to ask the goyim, or we have a million other reasons why we're not interested in asking the goyim. So what else is available for us? So it's in this context that the Gemara says, if you can't find the goy, for whatever reason you don't want to find the goy, then the halacha says, shishim is a good enough assessment whether there is tam or not. If you have 60 times of a davra mutta to a davra asr, the overwhelming odds are that the davra asr is not going to taste very well. It's going to be so diluted, it's going to be so minuscule amount, you're most probably not going to taste it. Now, it's not perfect, because if you paskin that it's mutta based on shishim, and then you start to eat it, and you realize, I remember that taste like before I was from, I remember that chaza taste, and you deserve, then you have to throw it out, that it's trace. So shishim is not an absolute foolproof mechanism, but it's pretty good, the Gemara says. It's good enough that Chazal were comfortable enough with having us rely upon it. So it's batel b'shishim. So it's interesting that the entire principle of batel b'shishim that we're all familiar with, we all know about from our kitchens, is almost like an afterthought. That if and when you can't find the goy, then you fall back on shishim. So the Ramah writes in the beginning of Hilchos Tarobas that our custom, at least in Ashkenaz communities, has been already for quite some time, that we don't rely on goyim anymore. We don't have goyim coming into our houses and tasting our chicken soup. We just stopped doing that. Why do we stop doing that? It's not 100% clear. There are some acharonim who say that, we don't know. Does the guy really, is he really tasting it? Is he not tasting it? Does he know what he's looking for? Not know what he's looking for? Other, Rabbi Kivega says it's a lumdish question because it's a machlekes. Are we supposed to tell the guy that we need his testimony? Are we supposed to just ask him casually? We're not sure whether to ask him casually, whether to ask him seriously, so we don't know how to ask him. So we threw our hands up, throw the towel in. So for a variety of reasons, the custom has become, we don't have shawls in our kitchen, we don't go run to ask the goyim. What we do is, what the Gemara says is the next best thing, is shishim. The Gemara says, okay, of course, if you don't have a goyim, whatever, you're not going to ask a goyim, so shishim is good enough. So that's been the standard, that's been the gold standard of Hilchos Kashrus for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. What appears in the Gemara is an afterthought, that if you have shishim, then you're good to go. So now, based on that, now we can have a shaila. So I have a pot of potato soup, and a little bit of chaza fell in, and I'm trying to be mishab shishim, and I have no idea. I wasn't looking care. I don't know exactly how much fell in it. It's hard to know. It's hard to tell. Some spilled afterwards. I don't know. Do I have shishim or not? So now what do I do? So to go ask the goyim for whatever, again, for whatever technical, halachic, logistical reasons, we're not asking the goyim anymore. So the only thing we have to go on right now is shishim. So what are you going to do? You have a suffix shishim. So it comes to Shulchan Aruch and quotes the name of the Rashba that we are of the opinion that Tam Kikr is a Shalom Deraisa. We're following Rabbi Natam, Chashish Rabbi Natam's view, that Tam Kikr is a Deraisa, which therefore means the requirement of shishim is a Deraisa, which therefore puts us right smack into the problem of Steka Deraisa L'chumra. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch quotes that if you have a Tarovis and you don't know whether you have shishim or not, you have a problem. You have a suffix deraisa l'chumra on your hands, and you have to throw the food out. You cannot eat the food. Again, we're not going to ask the goyim for any taste tests. We're going to assume that we have a problem, at least with the sveika lo nafka, sveika deraisa l'chumra. So now we finally have enough kibbutz. Now we have finally something to speak of practically. Why does it matter that we paskin like Rabbeinu Tam? If we would have paskin like Rashi, the Tam Kikr is only the Rabbanon. We would have paskin like the Rambam, that the Tam Kikr, in our cases, unless you have kezayis, it was perhaps very unlikely, would only be the Rabbanon. If we would have gone down the more lenient view, then we would have a right to be more maker when it comes to Safek and Shishim. So the opening din in Shulchan Aruch, in your Adaya, in Ruchas Tarov, Simen Tzadiches, is when you have a Safek and Shishim, you must go to Chumrah because Tam Kikr is deraisa. However, the corollary of that statement should be as follows. What if you have a situation where we're not dealing with any Tam? What kind of tarovus do we have that doesn't have any tam? When you're dealing with tarovus, what we call min bemino. So let's say I'm cooking up kosher chicken soup, big, big pot of kosher chicken soup, and a little bit of trefa chicken soup falls in. And I don't know how much fell in. Now what's the halacha? So that's a whole different ball game because we have to put aside for a moment the sugars of tam kikr and ask ourselves, well, this is like do with tam kikr. This is the same tam. Tam kikr could only make sense when you have two conflicting tamim. So you have a tam of chazir and a tam of potato soup. So if I'm eating the potato soup, I could potentially discern some tam of chazir. So that's a huge problem. That's the drasha we had last week from Bas B'chala, from Gilei Nochrim, from Nazir. Whatever the mokah for that din of tam kikr is, b'nei Torah, that's a huge problem. But here, I can't discern the trefa chicken soup. It's the same taste. So I have my kosher chicken soup together with my trefa chicken soup. Everything tastes the exact same. So what's the din? So what kind of joke is that? That's nothing to do with Tam Kikr. You're right. That's nothing to do with Tam Kikr. So what is the shear for that? So the shear is Bittel Barov. We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago. Rabbi Yehuda said, Min Bemino ain't a bottle, but we don't accept that. We follow the view of the Chachamim, and the regular rules of Bittel Barov kick in. So the din is catch this one. If you have a 51 ounces of kosher chicken soup and 49 ounces of trefa chicken soup get mixed in, the entire pot of soup is Mutal Lechetchila. It's Mutta Min HaTorah for sure. We'll see in a minute whether it's the Rabbanan. But it's Mutta Min HaTorah for sure. Because we paskin, Min B'mina was bottled Barov. And therefore there's no Nesin as Tam. Because it all tastes the same anyway. So no matter what you're tasting chicken soup. So that's not the parish of Tam Kikr. And therefore it's Mutta to eat the entire soup. That's the Din Min HaTorah. However, comes the Gemara in the seventh parak of Maseches Chulin and says, not so fast. That there is a halacha that, catch this one, you need Bittel B'shishim when you have a tarobes of min bemino. So I have kosher chicken soup, trefa chicken soup. I just asked the question, is it tam kikr? We just laughed at it and said, well, tam is a joke. It's a farce. The tam kikr tastes the same way. No, you still require shishim. For why in the world do you need shishim for? What is the purpose of this din of shishim? So all the rishonim are quick to point out, this is not a din in the Torah. It cannot possibly be a din in the Torah. It doesn't make any sense. Why a min b'she'eino mino, shishim is the deraisa? Because it's there to prove that there's no tam. But by min b'mino, there is no concept of tam. So what in the world is the goal of bittul b'shishim? So this was a big machlekes in Rishonim. So the Rosh in Maseches Chulin gives what we usually consider to be the standard approach, the standard answer to this question, that the requirement of shishim by min b'mino, by chicken soup and chicken soup, is a chumra midrabanan as a gezeira otu min b'she'eino mino. Because what may play out is as follows. Let's say a woman's going to have, she's cooking a pot of kosher chicken soup, and a little bit of trefa chicken soup falls in. So she quickly calls the rabbi, and the rabbi says, well, how much was it? So she says, oh, there was a rove of kosher. No problem, there was a rove of kosher. The rabbi says, great, it's mutach, I'm not this. That is a correct psak, you know, on a level of deraisa. What's going to happen now? Next week, a little bit of trefa chicken soup is going to fall into a pot of potato soup. So she said, oh, I asked the rabbi last week, and he told me, Rav, I feel good. The rabbi's busy. He's preparing his Shabbos. I'm going to draw a shiddah. He's not talking. He's telling comments. I'm not going to bother the rabbi now with the same silly question. Last week he told me it's Batel Barov, so I'm sure he's going to tell me this week it's Batel Barov. Yeah, really? Not quite. There's a huge difference between the two. Last week, it was min b'mino, so there was no tam issue. This week is min b'sheino mino, so it's an issa deraisa of tam. So the person's going to make a mistake and think, if Rov works by min b'mino, it probably works by min b'sheino also. And therefore the Rosh says, you're going to end up violating deraisas. So says the Rosh, the only way to reap shot this gemara is, gazru min b'mino, otu min b'sheino mino. So it comes out, according to the Rosh, that the requirement for shishim is not always the same. Sometimes shishim is required in HaTorah. That's when there's a concern of tam. Sometimes shishim is only required by the Rabbanim. So the Rambam happens not to give that reason for the requirement of shishim by min b'mino. Not surprising, because the Rambam basically holds tam kikur is not deraisa. So it's hard to make a gezeira on something that's not really deraisa. So the Rambam gives a little bit of a different twist. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Machos Asuros that although technically speaking, min HaTorah, things are really batel barov, bittul is a funny, funny thing in halacha, because bittul is presupposing that people don't take it too seriously. That's bittul. If you think about it, whenever you have bittul, things are betalim. Chometz is batel. Vezor is batel. Bittul Torah means, bittul Torah means that you don't take the Torah too seriously. That's what bittul Torah really means. So bittul always has that notion of, gosh, you're bad. This is a garnish. This is a nothing. So it says that I'm not. You have 49 ounces of trefa chicken soup out of a pot of 100. So you barely bikoshi, you hit over Rove. Min HaTorah, the 49 that come out the laser, they're a garnish, they're nothing, nobody cares about them. Says the Rambam, that's true Min HaTorah, but in the eyes of the people, it doesn't look that way. People think, Rabbi, that's almost like half my soup. Is it? You just said half my soup is ka'afer diara. That's not really true. So therefore, Midr Rabbanan Chazal said that we can't really truly apply bittul until the dover is, the rabbi coined the phrase, nevar ha'issa ba'otze miyuto. It's such a small amount, such a small, teeny amount that people don't even realize, don't even think that it's there. So therefore, Midr Rabbanan, they said, although you're right, min ha'Torah, bittul barov, it's rope, it's good, it's good. But lemaisa, Midr Rabbanan, it can't be. We cannot let bittul apply when people are staring at the pot and saying, gee, this is my lucky day. 49 ounces fell into my 51 ounces. I saved a lot of money. Favorite chicken soup is cheaper than kosher chicken soup. Saved a lot of money. Maybe I'll do it next time also.
You see how many times it's not like it's become right.
So you're right. So in the pure world of their eyes, you are correct. But in the world of people's perception is very, very important. In halacha, so there are a lot of things that Chazal instituted because of perception. The whole notion of Marisayin and Mechse Kimabashals and all kind of the Mechse to all there, because it is very, very important the way people perceive things. I think one of my father-in-law's favorite lines, which has always been, continues to go with me through life, perception is more important than reality. So it's in a certain sense, there is a degree of truth to that. So therefore comes the halacha and says, when the Rosh Hashanah, the Rav Hashanah, Tachas, the Maisa, opening Siman in Shulchan Aruch Chachos says, when you're cooking chicken soup and tray for chicken soup falls in, you require shishim. But let's not forget, even though you require shishim, that's a shishim derabanan, not a shishim deraisa. So now, it's a shishim derabanan, let's be makel, let's find some coolers. I'm cooking my kosher chicken soup and a little bit of tray for chicken soup falls in and I have no idea how much fell in. I don't know, I'm looking at it, I don't really know how to make shishim, I'm trying, I missed that day of chemistry 101, I don't know how to count, I don't know how to use beakers, I don't know how to do a flask, I'm not sure what the difference between a beaker and a flask, I have no idea how to count this shishim, I have no idea what to do. So I just take this very, very lackadaisical approach. Well, I remember learning in Tzmicha that it's only Dirabonin anyway, and I remember that Suffolk Dirabonin Lekula, so any shah that happens in my kitchen is all Suffolk Dirabonin Lekula, everything is okay. As long as it's min memino, everything's good to go. So comes the Shulchan Aruch and quotes to the Rashi and says, not so fast. There is a very, very important distinction in halacha, and this goes way beyond your day at Taroves. We have this grandiose principle called Safek Dirabanan Lekula. That's true, 100% true. It's a Mishnah, Gemara, many places. Safek Dirabanan Lekula. Safek Dirabanan Lekula means that you're a Talmid Chacham, you know what you're doing, you did all, you learned your Adair, you learned Hilchos Shabbos, you know exactly what to do, and now there is some kind of a Safek, just an unresolved kind of a Safek. I just partially don't know. I don't know, did it spill, did not, I have no idea what happened. That's al zendam or safek derabanan lekula. Some of the Rabbanan Lekul does not mean don't bother learning, don't find out anything, you know, keep your head in the sand, don't know anything. I have no idea how to, I don't know how to count Shishim. I forgot, did the rabbi say Shishim or did he say 50? I don't know. Oh, some of the Rabbanan Lekul, everything's butter. Some of the Rabbanan Lekul doesn't mean what we call a chisor nyudia is nishkein sofik. That's not called a sofik in Allah. It's like there's a ruchas brachas, there's a rule, sofik brachas lahakal. We have a sofik, and we have sfakis, let's say, I don't know. Is it a fruit? Is it a vegetable? Is it a fruit or a vegetable? And all said and done, so you don't know. Okay, so the post can say, make Adama, because Adama is the same for the two brachas. So why do I have to waste time learning Hilchos Brachas? Why do I got to go study the Torah Mesorah, silly little brachas be a book and everything? I'm making shahakal and everything. Everything is it's a soft thing. I don't know what brachas to make on bread. I don't know, do I make hamotzi, do I make mezonos, do I make shahakal or Adama? If I make shahakal, I'm good. So soft thing, I'm cool, everything's good. So the post can say, that's a joke. That's an abuse of the principle. Some of the Rabbanan Lekul is when you did your efforts, you did all your mamatim, and then at the end, you don't know what to do. Okay, some of the Rabbanan Lekul. So you can't just hide behind sfeikis all the time. But in theory, if there really does arise a case of a valid, legitimate sfeik the Rabbanan Lekul, we will be more makil in minbiminos than we will be in minbishenominos. So that those are really the ABCs of Yerideya, that minbishenomino is a deraisa problem, that's what we're choshesh for. There's a deraisa problem, and therefore the requirement for shishim is a concern with deraisa, and therefore all sfeikas on the chumrah. When you're dealing with something which is only a shishim derabanan, for whatever reason, it's only a shishim derabanan, then yes, there is a principle called sfeika derabanan lekula, but no, it's not a free-for-all, just to, you know, don't bother learning your day and just hope and pray that everything is sfeikas. You can't run your whole kitchen based on sfeika derabanan lekula.
According to the Rambam, why does the shir itself have to be shishim? In other words, if it's a math, I understand what the other shir is. Mm-hmm.
Right. Absolutely, right. Right, you're right. It's a certain sense, it's an arbitrary number. The Rambam writes that number of shishim is not the only number that we have for nevada iser. The Rambam writes that say, truma, they upped it up to 100. By orally killer kem, they upped it up to 200. Some things which are dram chashuvim, they said, are not both altogether. So that, it is, in a certain sense, an arbitrary number. It's a number that is a reflection of the fact that it's very, very insignificant. 1 to 60 is somehow considered to be a very, very insignificant number. So our starting point, in pretty much in Tarovis, is that there are really two factors we have to always look at. We have to look at, are we dealing with a Tarovis of Min Bimino? Or are we dealing with a Tarovis of Min Mishen Amina? And we're going to talk a different language in each one. But our ending point is, Tachlis, we're going to need Shishim. At the end of the day, when all the dust settles, we're going to need Shishim by both. Maybe one's the rice, one's the Rabbanim, but that is going to be the magic number that we're going to look for is going to be Shishim. However, notwithstanding the fact that Shishim is going to be helpful and Bittul Barov for sure is going to be helpful in the Raisa, come Chazal and tell us that there is an exception and several important exceptions to this principle. And it really goes back to what the Rambam mentioned, the notion that the whole idea of Bittul is never Isabiyot Zimiyuto. The idea of Bittul is that something is insignificant, we can just kind of, you know, just pretty much ignore it if it's such a small amount. Comes the Halacha and tells us, not everything can be ignored. You can't just machavek everything and say, this is no problem. This is dvar b'tehel. This is nothing. This is the earth. It's not really here. So a little bit of trefa chicken soup falls into kosher chicken soup. A little bit of one piece of food falls into a lot of it. Then we can sometimes ignore. But what if you have what's called a dover choshev? What if you have something that you can ignore it? You can't look at it and say, come on, it doesn't exist. Then all bets are off. So then come Chazal and say, when you have a dover choshev, so a dover choshev cannot be bottle, because the very nature of bittul doesn't lend itself when it's a dover. You can't say never is to be able to meet, though. It's a very, very important thing that's sitting in front of me. That chumrah of dover choshev is only a chumrah midrabanan. Poshup shot is that was a chumrah midrabanan. Midaraisa, nothing is choshev. Midaraisa, if it's a bottle, but you can't see, you can't taste, it's nothing to worry about. But that whole institution called dover choshev was instituted by Chazal. And that's something that now could potentially invalidate any kind of a bittul if something falls into that category of dover choshev. The question becomes, who measures choshev? What criteria are you using to measure whether something is a dover choshev or not? So this gets very, very tricky. So there is a machloikes hatanoim. Many people are familiar with this from the beginning of Maseches Beitza. That's where the sugya makes its grand appearance. The Gemara quotes a machloikes hatanoim about what's called the dover sheva minyan. If you have an item that it's also, it appears in other places, it's tucked away in the end of Masechta Vedazar, the end of Chulin, but 9 out of 10 people probably saw it in Beitza first. So the very beginning of Masechta Beitza, So you have a sugya called Davar Sheva Minyan. I have an item that's sold by the number. It means people take it seriously. People count it out and say, I'm going to the store, I want six of these things. That's where people talk. They don't say, yeah, just give me a bag full of items. Yeah, I want six, I want 10, I want 12. There's a very, very specific number that's associated with something. So that was a machlokes at the Noam. Is a Davar Sheva Minyan that shows that each item really has significance to it. It's not necessarily expensive, but that in and of itself is considered to be a sign of demarcation of chashivos. So there was a machlokes at the Noam. Is a Davar Sheva Minyan a problem or not? Is that automatically a no-no in terms of bittul? Then there was a further machlokes at Maroim within that tishit of Tanoim. Assuming there is such a chumrah called Davar Sheva Minyan, does Davar Sheva Minyan mean something that's always sold by the number? It means it's inconceivable to ever sell it any other way? Or it's most of the time sold by the number, but you're not crazy if you ask for it for kind of a general, you know, X amount. You don't actually spell what X is. So you have three different possibilities. There's some Tanoim will say they never heard of the whole thing. Davar Sheva Minyan is not enough for Davar Choshev to undermine Bittul. And others said, no, it is. And then assuming that it is, Eshedai Kedemanis, Koshedai Kedemanis, Machayisav Yechmei Shlokish, what exactly that means? Where does this take us, Lamaisa? So there are different opinions in the Rishonim how to paskin. So we try to be machmer in this. The end of Hilchos Taravos, so the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam talk about this, and our practice is if it's something that's a Davar Sheva Minyan, a Davar Sheva Minyan could potentially be a problem. Question, what is a Davar Sheva Minyan? Do we have Davar Sheva Minyan? So one of the Davar Sheva Minyan that the poskim raised a serious question was about eggs. If you have a taravos of eggs, again, we very rarely have treif eggs. We once in a while have eggs which have blood spots in them, but most of our eggs with blood spots are not even the old blood spots that your great-great-grandmothers knew about from Europe. In the olden days, when you had an egg with a blood spot, that meant there was a fertilized egg, and a fertilized egg is a big, big problem. That egg has to be discarded. That egg is considered to be treif. The 99% of eggs today, even if they have a little bit of blood in them, do not come from fertilized eggs for a very simple reason, because there are no roosters around. Because most egg companies keep the roosters 10 miles away from the hens. So you're not going to have a fertilized egg. So why do you every once in a blue moon bump into some blooded egg? It usually is not from fertilization, usually just from a scratch or something. The chicken had a mock or whatever it is, and then just kind of blood got in there or something. So rube the eggs and not. Some of you may have that image of your grandmothers, you know, sitting and cracking over eggs, and every other egg was tossed into the garbage in the old days. So people just have to be aware that if you buy these cage-free, you know, the roaming around the eggs that people like, for the healthy eggs that have the roosters walking around, so then those go back to the old styles of grandmothers back from Poland. So you have to keep more of an eye out on those eggs. But bottom line is you can have the treif eggs. I'm not even talking about those kinds of treif eggs. I'm talking about you can have real treif eggs. An egg that came from a bird that was a treifa. You can have an egg that came from an ostrich. Now again, it's hard to believe you can mix up an ostrich egg and a chicken egg. It's not that big, chicken but that big. But theoretically, any egg that comes from a non-kosher bird is considered to be a non-kosher min haTorah. So you could potentially have tarovsim and hilchos habeitzim. So there's a whole discussion in Shulchan Aruch. What's the status of eggs? Are eggs considered to be dvarim chashuvim or eggs considered to be not dvarim chashuvim? If they're not dvarim chashuvim, so we just plug in the old formula from before, chad v'trei botol. So if I have two kosher eggs and one treif egg, they get mixed them together, no problem, I can eat all three. So you may remember that sugya b'yidim maseches beitzah. There's a whole discussion about that. One egg, a yotzim and a treifa, mixed it with two others, and then shalom Yisrael, everything was mutter. Wait a second, is that true? Is an egg considered to be a dovah choshev or not? So let's stop and try to figure out what a Davar Choshev means. So if Davar Choshev is connected to Davar Sheva Minyan, things that are only sold by the number, so eggs, are eggs only sold by the number, or eggs sold kind of, you know, in a bag? So the Poskim Shulchan Aruch have a whole pipple about that. So I don't care what happened in Poland in the 1600s, like if it happens in Bergenfield in 2023. You go into a store today, go into Grand Essex and say, I want to buy a few eggs. Give me a handful of eggs. How about five, six eggs? And we don't sell eggs like that. I think we sell eggs. There's a dozen eggs. So we sell the two dozen, 36 eggs. It says on the package how many eggs there are on. It's not like I'm going into the store and, you know, I'm buying a bag of something that maybe there are 10 eggs, maybe there are 12 eggs in it. So it's very, very hard for us today to say that eggs are not a Davar Sheva Minyan. That's the bad news. The good news is that we don't have the shahs anymore because no one's walking around with a tray for eggs, as man as that. But in theory, that whole pilpul of the postcard about what the status of eggs are is probably irrelevant for man as that. Except if you live in one place, to the best of my knowledge, that they still sell eggs by the bag, by the arbitrary number, and that is in Washington Heights. So I remember when I was learning, I don't mean the stores in Washington Heights. So I remember when I was, when we were learning Yeridaya, so my chavrus at the time, so we got up to the siman, about the eggs, whether the eggs are considered Dosher Minyan or not. And he said to me, he was once walking in St. Nicholas, and there was a guy standing there with a bag selling eggs. And he was just curious, not that he was going to buy those eggs, but he asked the guy, how many eggs are in the bag? And you know what the guy said? We have no idea how many eggs. A bag full of eggs. You want to buy a bag of eggs, you buy a bag of eggs. So, again, I don't know where those eggs came from. I'm not sure what birds they came from. I'm not sure what planet they came from. But in Washington Heights, at least at one point, they were still selling eggs, not as Dovshim and Minyan. But in the rest of society that sells eggs according to the number, so again, our eggs are a Dovshim and Minyan. But again, it's not all that relevant for us. What other potential applications do we have of Dovshim and Minyan? So the Gemara quotes that, what if you have something that's really intrinsically choshen? Is this a really, real? This is like a really, real expensive something? So then the Mishnah says, yeah, that's a problem. And everyone agrees it's really called a Dov Shem Minyan. To which the Mishnah gives a list of different things. The Goze Perech, Rimoni Badon, the Kikmo Shel Bavai. The Mishnah gives you a list of nuts from this place and pomegranates from that place and fruits from this place. A little Tu B'Shvat, the pre-Tu B'Shvat discussion. Those are the Dvarim HaChashuvim. So the Rambam writes, what am I supposed to do with this? I don't know where Badon is. I don't know where this place is. So the Rambam writes, these are just examples. If you have an item that's a very, very, very Dvarim HaChashuv, so then that is going to be something that's not going to be brought up. What other things are not Dvarim HaTalim? So the Gemara in the end of the Sefer of Edazar and the Chulin talk about what's called the chaticha haru'uya l'hiskabed. If you have a slice of food, a piece of meat, that it's normal to serve and a guest comes in. So a guest walks in and says, oh, you know, what's for dinner? I'll give you a nice, good geshmaka piece of meat. It's a chaticha l'hiskabed. That's called a dov chashuv. And a dov chashuv is not going to be bottled. So all of a sudden, we have to go back to everything we've been saying till now. When you have three pieces of meat, two pieces of kosher, one is treif, it's all bottled barov, everything's good to go. Comes the Gemara and says, puts the brace on it, says, no, but med b'murim, that it's good to go. That's only when it's not a chaticha l'iskabed. But if it's a chaticha l'iskabed, it's a chosher piece of meat. So I think our experts in the meat industry will tell us, a chosher piece of meat, it's not a choshev, it's something significant, you'd serve it to a guest. And therefore, all of a sudden, it's not bottled. So before we apply the rules of bittul barov, we have to always constantly check and check and check. We check ourselves and say, is it a Dov HaChashuv or not a Dov HaChashuv? So 99% of these examples of Dvarim Chashuvim are irrelevant for us today. The eggs are irrelevant. Most people are not having slices of nevelas sitting around their house that are getting mixed in with their kosher barbecues. These kinds of things just don't happen in Bizman Hazeh. But what does happen in Bizman Hazeh is the next application of a Dov HaChashuv. And that's what the Gemara says in Maseches Chulin. If you have what's called a beria. A beria is a whole, according to many opinions, a whole live item, even though it's not live anymore, but it's a whole entity. It's something that kind of grew together as a unit, an entire entity of a creature that grew as a unit, that is considered to be a Dov HaChashuv. And Dov HaChashuv, we apply the rule, Dov HaChashuv Eino Batel. It's that halacha of Dov HaChashuv Eino Batel, of Beria, that is the most serious issue in Kashrus till today. Because of the following, the Gemara Maseches Makos gives you a list of different things that are berries. One of them are bugs. And insects are considered to be a dover berry. It's a Befesh Mishnah Maseches Makos that a whole insect, a whole bug, I mean whole, from top of the legs to the bottom of the wings, whatever, the whole thing is intact. That's considered to be a dover choshev, and it can never ever, we cannot apply the rules of Bittul to it. What would the ramifications be of that? So let's say a person is sitting down and they're having a wonderful, delicious dish of some kind of a food, and there is a strong suspicion that there is a bug inside this food. They're looking around, they don't really see it. Why don't they see it? Well, bugs are black, and there's a lot of other black things around, and the food is kind of, you know, it's hot to see, and it's all covered over by all other things. Let's say I have a big, big bowl of cholent, and it could be there's a bug, a very good reason to believe there's a bug in there, but I just don't see it. So basically, in your idea, what you don't see doesn't bother you. So it's potentially going to be subject to the rules of Bittul. You may be wondering, isn't it a problem of nosin tam? So we assume that bugs give off a really, really bad taste. I mean, hopefully nobody ever tried it. But we assume that they're nosin tam of gam, and therefore the taste that they give off is not really a concern. So we kind of go back to the model of it's a taroves, because I can't see it. It's a taroves where there's no issue of tam. So what shear do you use? So I could use the shear of, is it bottle barov? If it's bottle barov, then technically this bug is going to be mutter. So even if I know for a fact there's a bug in this bowl of shulent, but if it's batel, it should be batel. The problem is it batel? And the answer is, well, it depends. If it's still intact, if it hasn't been touched yet, if it hasn't been destroyed yet, so it's still a beria. And a beria, the Mishnah says, a beria is not betela. So this poses a big, big challenge for us. So now, it doesn't mean that all foods are off limits. What it means is this follows. There are two stages of pasuk and shaila in Hilchos Toloim today. First, you have to ascertain, is there any real reason to believe that you have a bug here? If there's no reason to believe you have a bug, if there's not enough halachic concern to raise that flag of that alarm in the first place, then enjoy your food and don't worry about it. But if you reach the point that there is enough halachic concern, then the second question you have to ask yourself is, okay, but I don't see that bug. I couldn't see it even if I tried to see it because there's so many other ingredients in this food. So do I have a right to say it's batel? So it's a two separate independent questions. If the answer to the first question is that, yes, there's a concern, and the answer to the second question is, no, you can't apply bittul, then that equals a very expensive trip to the frumi, grocery store for very, very expensive produce that is free of bugs. So if the answer to both of those questions, one is yes and one is no, then we have an issue on our hands. If the answer to the question number one is no, and the question number two is yes, either one of those questions, then enjoy your dinner, and there's nothing at all to worry about. So, of course, the answer very often to both those questions are the answer that we don't want. That sometimes, we're dealing with kinds of foods that do have a concern. We have issues of what's called muksak betaloim. Either that we are really, really concerned that there are bugs in this particular food, or we have enough halachic reason to be chayshish that there may be bugs in this particular food. So we've already answered the first question being, yes, we have a problem. The fact that, well, we have bittul barov and I can't see it is most probably not going to be true if those bugs are still intact. If those bugs are no longer intact, if they're no longer barriers, so then we're going to be good to go. So even if there are bugs there, we're still going to be okay. So we're going to have to hopefully fine tune next week what that means for us practically. We spoke a little bit about this when we spoke about bugs a while ago, a good chazara. So to try to talk about just what does that mean exactly? If we really worry about barriers, so when is that barrier concern a real concern? Or is perhaps that less of a concern? So hopefully, next week, we'll try to put some of the final touches on this angle of the sugya b'tzvah.